Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording on the 29th of December. The year is coming to its close. I really hope that everyone out there had a good Christmas. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, I hope you had a good winter break of some kind. It's been very nice here in Reykjavik. It's been unseasonably warm. As I'm looking out of the window now, I can see a misty city before me, which is quite rare here in Reykjavik. We don't get a lot of mist. Usually at this time of the year, we'd be snowed under, quite literally. But it's been so warm that it's just been raining and misty. So climate change in full effect out here. However, I had a really good Christmas. I've been, throughout the whole of December, really, I've been engaged in the Games of the Year making process. You know, I've been having guests on. If you listen to the last couple of episodes, you will have heard from Ben, Brad and Blink. Last week, of course, we had the patron goatee vote, which is always one of my favorite episodes of the year to make. And as I am the host, I have cheated a little bit and given myself that extra week in December just to play a few more games, to juggle my list, to think about things. And it's always this little pocket of time between Christmas and New Year when I feel ready to actually solidify the list I've been wrestling with and puzzling over, and to make this episode, this very episode, it is the Games of the Year 2025 Final Cut episode. I will say that this time I made it primarily as a video. That's up on YouTube now, so if you'd like to listen to this podcast with game footage, then you can go and watch that at youtube.com/gamingintheWild. Link in the show notes if you'd like to watch the video version. I will say, however, that for this podcast version, I reprogrammed the music to use primarily music from the games I'm talking about. YouTube flags that stuff, so you can't really do it, but here on podcasts, it tends to be okay. So YouTube listeners will get the benefit of video, and podcast listeners will get the benefit of video game music, so pick your poison. And the games that I played in December did actually turn out to have quite a bearing on my list. There are two games in my top 10 that actually displaced games that had been hanging around for a while that I thought were maybe loose links, and that was maybe, you know, wishing I could shift. And I played two games in December, one of which is a recommendation from Discord, one of which had been on my radar anyway, and both of those ended up crashing the top 10 at the lowest positions. It's a number 10 game and a number 9 game. I think partially because I was worried about recency bias, so maybe I deprioritized them just a little bit. But it was the best I could do, and I'm actually really glad that those two games, the 10th place and 9th place games, made it in, because it made the list feel right. It made the list feel whole. So in the end, I was really happy with where things came down, having puzzled over it for a long time, as I always do. Maybe too long. I don't know. I really get into this process. But it is like the culmination of a year of game playing, you know? It's like we spend all of this time rooting around for indie games, like looking at trailers, picking up on word of mouth, getting those Metacritic scores for things we'd never heard of. And I guess this list is kind of the reason for all that, you know? It's not just an egotistical expression of my taste in games or anything like that. It's actually the result of all of the work that went into Gaming in the Wild across the year. So perhaps that's why it feels so important to me. But I really hope that you enjoy the list anyway. I will say, while we're talking about looking back across the year, I posted a Patreon blog during the break that listed out and linked to and summarized all of the 34 featured game reviews that happened in 2025. That was a really fun process. I divided them up by month. So we start off with Citizen Sleeper 2. We end with Dispatch and Skate Story. And I really enjoyed doing that, actually. Maybe that will become a tradition. It got a few likes over on the Patreon, so I think people enjoyed that little roundup of all of the games that were covered on the show. throughout the year. While we're on Patreon, I will also mention that I still have a few game codes left for new or upgrading patrons. So as well as getting a Discord invite and all of the behind-the-scenes stuff, over 20 bonus episodes about all kinds of off-topic things, you can also bag a code for 1,000 times resist on PlayStation or Steam, a Steam code for Ultros, a Steam code for Citizen Sleeper 1, or a Steam code for Gareth Damian Martin's brilliant first game, In Other Waters. So if you're an existing patron who's enjoyed the show this year and feels like throwing me a couple extra bucks in 2026, you will get a game code for your upgrade. And if you are a new patron who's been listening for a while or has just found the show, hop into the Patreon from as little as $1 a month. You will get a game code and all of those other bonuses too. And the game code Patreon drive has been something of a success. We've had an influx of new members, so thank you and hello to Doom to Bloom, Gavin, Ruben, Good as Gold, 8-Bit Rot, Jack, Mr. Mo, Dakota, Pinched Slinky, Vaughn, and David, all of whom joined over the Christmas break. Some probably popped in for the game code, but I really hope that you guys stick around. And of course, special thanks to the boss tier patrons, Shy Guy, King Champ, Keris, Susanna Maria, Nate, and Sid B. You too can join the boss tier, and you will get a thank you on every single podcast and video that I make. And with all of that said, I think it's time to get into the games of the year list for 2025. I will say that it's a bit of an interesting list this year. I have 7 honorable mentions because the year was so stacked. I have 3 almost 10s. Those are games that I really wanted to get into the chart, couldn't quite squeeze in. I had 4 candidates for that 10th Wild One slot. 1 game, 1 out, but there were 3 almost 10s, so they get their own little bracket. And then, of course, there is the Games of the Year Top 10 and my Game of the Year, which I think is probably not what you're expecting. Or maybe it is if you've been listening closely. So here it is. It's the Games of the Year Final Cut episode for 2025. My first honourable mention is Keep Driving, a solo dev indie project that is all about the journey. The thing that I love most about sweeping RPGs is that they're often about a huge road trip where you cross a kingdom on a grand mission with a party of friends, and without fail, the journey itself is the best part. Keep Driving switches out high fantasy for lovingly crafted mundanity by making the entire game a road trip. You're a 20-something in the 90s heading to a festival across the country, and instead of potions and weapons, you need gas and coffee, snacks and beer, and tie replacements. And instead of fighting spirits and goblins, the turn-based combat is about you versus heavy traffic or a distracting rainbow. Your party are made up of hitchhikers you pick up along the way, and every run you take through Keep Driving will be a completely different story. The game is almost like a story generator, and how it ends will be up to you. This game really captured a feeling of freedom that is bracing and rare, and I think it was one of the unsung heroes of 2025. It's only on Steam for now, but it's perfect on deck since controller support was added. That's Keep Driving. My next honourable mention is Sektori. It's a thrillingly modern late-year surprise that was an unapologetically difficult twin-stick shooter. It was made by Kimmo Latinen, a former Housemarque developer who left the studio to continue the original quest and carry the torch for classic shoot-em-ups. And what he came up with is one for the books. It's every bit as good as the Housemarque games Resogun or Nex Machina. It's a slick, dynamic, silky action game where you clear spaces of waves of enemies, you collect the crystals they drop, and passing certain thresholds offers the chance to cash them in for a weapon, speed, shield upgrade, etc. But the longer you hold out, the more powerful the upgrade you get, so there's a compelling risk-reward system at play here. And you will need to master both the action and the complex power-up system to be strong enough to finish a run. The name Sektori comes from the arena changing shape as you play, which also revitalizes that classic twin-stick crowd control gameplay, and the randomized, ever-evolving bosses stop it from becoming stale or grindy. I think this game might just be an improbable new benchmark for the genre, which is quite something in 2025. That's Sektori. The next honourable mention is Despelote, a small autobiographical slice-of-life game that really was one to remember. It's a first-person game in which you play as a football-obsessed kid who is witnessing the Ecuadorian national men's team going on an improbable World Cup qualifying run. But as well as the football, it's also about day-to-day life. It's about going to school and family dinners, playing with friends, minding your sister, and kicking a ball around both in the park and on a game system. And as you run around doing your thing, you can hear the Ecuador matches happening in the background on a radio in a store or on a TV in a bodega window, and you decide what to do. You decide whether you want to try and get your ball down from a tree, run around with your friends, steal a ball from some other kids and go on a tear around the neighborhood, or stand in the street and watch the game unfold on television. Whatever you do, at the end of the day, you will hear your mum shouting your name and your name echoing through the streets, and you know it's time to go home. I think this game is a childhood nostalgia bullseye that is both culturally specific to a moment in Ecuador and kind of universal too, like a tender, heartfelt portrait of childhood that just hits home. It's only a couple of hours long. It's available on Steam or Switch. That's Despelote. My next honourable mention, and the first AAA game on this list, is Donkey Kong Bonanza. This was the year of the Switch 2, and Donkey Kong Bonanza was the best game that Nintendo released for the system. It's an all-action smashing game, more than a platformer, where you tear through the landscape with DK's lashing fists, collecting bananas, meeting NPCs, and doing some kind of quest. I don't quite remember, the story slid straight out of my brain, to be honest. But this is a crazy game with entirely destructible environments that switches the precision and the neatness of Mario games for a sense of DK craziness. So while it's a bit more chaotic and unscripted and less manicured than a Mario game, the gameplay vision really suits this character. I'm really glad that this game wasn't just a Mario game with a DK reskin, but something else, something with its own personality. I really enjoyed delving deeper and deeper into this game's world and bashing through bosses and the surreal sequences of levels that lie beneath the Earth's crust. I did feel the game was a bit too long, and so I didn't see the ending quite yet, but I hear it's really something to see, and so I'll get there in 2026. But I think this is definitely a game that deserves an honourable mention. It was a memorable title from 2025. That's Donkey Kong Bonanza. My next mention is Battlesuit Aces. I was a huge fan of Battle Chef Brigade, so when Trinket Studios announced that the follow-up would be a freewheeling epic space mission with visual novel and card battler gameplay, I was all in. In this game, you play as Heathcliff, the captain of a team of mech-battling misfits called Patchworks. You fly across the galaxy, engaging in Star Trek-style minisodes, where you get to do some fun story stuff and hang out with your crew, and then engage in a mech battle, whether it's with space pirates, xenofauna, or a strange alien force that's tearing across the galaxy. The card battling system is simple and fun. You can craft mods to customize your mechs, and you can customize your team, adding new members via a cool faction system. And I really like both the battling and the chilled out visual novel sections that happen on the mothership. I watched every incidental crew encounter that I could. I think the voice acting and the crisp, fresh art really helped there. My only ding on the game is that I felt the ending was a little bit abrupt and felt almost rushed, like there was meant to be more originally, perhaps. But what was there was really lively and a lot of fun. That's Battlesuit Aces. Two more mentions to go, and the next one is Slots and Daggers. This was a lovely, tidy little roguelike game that mixed fruit machine spins with turn-based combat. It's a simple game where you're playing a slot machine in a bar. It's embedded into a table that you're looking down at. The screen displays the intro to the land that you're in, and then the enemies that will stand in your way. You pull the lever to roll which weapons, spells, and shields will be at your disposal for the fight. You can add new weapons and spells to the pack, power up your existing weapons, and buy consumables in the shop that can really change the game. You also get a currency that can be used to unlock permanent buffs between runs, and it was a lot of fun cracking this little meta puzzle and trying to create a broken enough build to see the ending. I played this in just a few nights, and it was perfect at what it does. Not every roguelike needs to be a forever game, and I really respect its short length, its manageable power curve, and its neat systems. Play it over a weekend and enjoy it while it lasts. That's Slots and Daggers. And the final honourable mention goes to Clover Pit, another fruit machine game that mixes Inscription-style escape room mechanics with Buckshot Roulette's grimy high-stakes strategy and Balatro's endless well of boons, buffs, builds, and power-ups. Like Slots and Daggers, it was short, well-wrought, and perfect at what it did. And breaking the game and seeing jackpot after jackpot after jackpot because you've jacked up your luck and kind of rigged the deck was really, really satisfying. I had a lot of fun with this one, so it makes my list as the final honourable mention. That's Clover Pit. If you've been watching a lot of Games of the Year content, you might have spotted a theme. People are really struggling to fit all the games they liked into their lists this year, and I'm no exception. As the final list started to form, I had a dilemma. There were four games that were vying for my 10th place spot, and it was too hard to separate them. In the end, I did. I don't like to hedge on these lists, and one game did win out, which I will get to, but these next three are the almost 10s. They're the three that nearly made it, that on a different day would have been my number 10 game of the year. The first almost 10 is Power Wash Simulator 2, which I spent over 70 hours playing this year, and there is a really good reason for that, as I slowly sprayed the dirt away from cabin complexes, motels, ski resorts and temples. It felt like I was spraying away my own mental tension too. The hiss of the hosepipe, the occasional plane going over or car rumbling past, the way the water cuts through the different types of dirt on different materials, and the new inclusions like cleaning objects at your home base or using a winch to reach higher places easily, it all added up to a perfect sequel to a near-perfect game. Ultimately, another game won out, but I couldn't recommend this game more. It's the ultimate handheld chill game. That was Power Simulator 2. I also had And Roger in the Almost Tens. It's an hour-long minimalist story game, and it really packs an outsized emotional punch for its diminutive runtime. It starts out as kind of a mystery about a child who wakes up in the house to find their father gone with a strange man in his place. But the story evolves in directions that were genuinely unexpected, with reveals that are masterfully put together. Almost everyone that I know has shed a tear at the ending of this game, and I really can't share why, but I challenge you to play it and not shed a tear yourself. That's And Roger. And then the final Almost 10, and this one is really painful, is Lost in Random, The Eternal Die. In a year that saw the release of Hades 2, it was this small-scale tribute to the Hades formula that really won my heart. Whereas Hades 2 was kind of sprawling, The Eternal Die was tidy and concise. They nailed that slick, fast, methodical combat, and where Hades 2 tread over familiar turf in the blood-gated rooms, the boons, the divine visitations, Lost in Random introduced some really fresh elements. There are dice rolls for damage, there are mid-dungeon carnival board games, and a sense of unhinged circus master energy, and the power-up system is a wonderful little build-crafting puzzle in itself that you can crack open in under 20 hours. I think the only ding against the game is that it lacks a little bit of dialogue, so your friendly NPCs back at the home base fall mute a little too quickly between runs. They just run out of things to say, basically. But other than that, this was a tight, snappy, charming, addictive, dungeon-crawling roguelike that I won't forget anytime soon. That's Lost in Random, The Eternal Die.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeymtdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
If you've been listening for a couple of years, you will know that number 10 is the wild one spot. It's the spot I reserve for something that's a little bit of a curveball and outside of the usual range of these lists. And this year, the wild one slot goes to Many Nights a Whisper, a 90-minute game that just completely enthralled me. You play as a young archer with the weight of the world on your shoulders. They're training to make a single perfect shot into a stone chalice about half a kilometer away. If they make the shot, then the wishes of the people of this realm will all come true, and if they miss, then none of them will ever happen. By night, you hear those wishes from the people and choose whether you want to accept them, from childlike dreams to love and reciprocation to tectonic political shifts and even dark yearnings for revenge. Then by day, it's all about training for the shot. You talk to your mentor and then you practice your archery, starting off with nearby chalices and a simple yard and slowly graduating to chalices that are further and further away before the time finally comes for the single big shot. I won't spoil what happens, of course, but I will say that this short game managed to move my heart more in 2 hours than other games have in 80. The music is beautiful, the premise is excellent, the dialogue is awesome, and I love the freshness of the art too. Shout out to Gamer Jason in the Discord for suggesting this as one of our games of the month in the Single Sitting Social Club. It's a December goatee homework game that actually made it onto the list and into the Wild One slot no less. That's Many Nights a Whisper. I haven't been into a skating game since the original Tony Hawk, so it was always going to take something special to bring me back into the fold, and Skate Story did it within minutes, with a series of quite amazing creative decisions. In this game, rather than a traditional skater, we play as a glass demon who decides to try and escape from hell. They sign a contract with the devil, saying that if they can skate out of hell and eat the bright moons on all seven layers, they will win back their immortal soul. And so we escape through this wavy netherworld full of weird NPCs, philosophical musings, netherworld cops, and lunar female bosses. It's like a dark dream, which would be compelling enough, but the skating itself is weighty, crunchy, and visceral. There are challenge levels that you flow through at high speed, and then open areas to explore and practice, so the skating is right, the story is right, the setting is right, and the art and music are just perfect too. This game runs like a dream, even on a PC handheld. My only tiny knock against it is that it dragged a bit towards the end. A couple of chapters or cool ideas that maybe didn't need to be here, but overall it was hugely memorable. It was a real vision and a big achievement, so well done to Sam Eng, and I hope that this game gets all of the respect and the sales that it so richly deserves, even with that tough December release window. That's Skate Story. I felt pretty over superhero stuff after the huge glut of movies and shows we've seen in recent years, so I wasn't planning to play Dispatch, but the response to the game was wild. People I know were going crazy for the story, and each time a pair of episodes released, there was a wave of excitement and appreciation, and as a chronic FOMO sufferer, I just had to see what it was all about. It turned out to be a wonderful fusing of a Netflix-style animated show, a choice-based visual novel, and a light superhero management sim. As a hero who loses his powers, you become the dispatcher. You take calls, you try and send the right heroes for the situation, be it a fire, a riot, a lost cat, or whatever. And that's the gameplay, but it's really the other stuff that brings this game to life. The dialogue is sharp and edgy and snappy, the jokes are irreverent and sail the gap between dumb and funny pretty well, and the cast of characters, voiced by a mixture of Hollywood stars and YouTubers, is really memorable. These superheroes are surprisingly flawed and human, and I felt invested in trying to sail this team of misfits in the right direction. If that sounds good to you, I recommend playing an episode a night rather than binging it. I really looked forward to settling down at the end of a long day for my next Dispatch episode, and I really hope that we get more episodes as well. Much like Sectori seemed to be a new high watermark for shoot 'em ups, I feel like this might just be a new high watermark for visual novels. That's Dispatch. My seventh placed game is Sword of the Sea. If Skate Story was a weighty trundle through a dark, oppressive hellscape, then Sword of the Sea is like its lighter twin, offering a silken slide through a bright and colourful heaven. It's the apotheosis of everything that Matt Narva and Giant Squid have created to date, with the glittering sandscape and quiet wonder of Journey, the vibrant colours and mysterious megastructures of Abzu, and the free-flowing movement of the Pathless. In this game, you're a nameless sand surfer who traverses the desert. You light lanterns and then they convert into rolling waves, with fish swimming beneath. It's a really cool visual effect, and the areas in this game are really nicely designed as well. They have tons of secrets tucked away, often involving improbable triple jumps and pinpoint landings. There are opportunities for stunts, time trials, and putting all of your tricks to the test, but I think the core of this game's appeal is the feeling it gives the player. Matt Narva has said that he finds surfing to be a spiritual experience of a tiny human connecting with nature and acting in harmony with it. And of course that's a tall order to recreate in a game, but the combination of flowing movement, the colour, the sound, the music do create a certain sense of freedom and expression. I felt my anxieties melt away playing this game, and temporary as it may be, that's more than enough for this game to land on my list. I'm grateful that it exists. That's Sword of the Sea. And from clean aerial grace, we go back down to the grungy underworld with Ball Pit, a contemporary shoot 'em up with a compulsive, compelling, addictive formula. It looks simple enough. You move up a well and hordes of enemies come down towards you. Your job is to erase them by firing bouncing balls that can ricochet from enemies and walls. But the wave of enemies is oppressive and never-ending, and you need to power up constantly to keep them at bay. That means making selections from random drops and trying to create a build that will let you clear the screen fast enough to stay alive. This game is built on the architecture of a smart, carefully picked range of video game ideas, from Space Invaders to Arkanoid, Smash TV, Vampire Survivors, and Balatro. But it doesn't just draw from the pool, it adds more than its fair share of new ideas as well, like fusing weapons together to create super weapons that also free up a slot in your power-up tree, and you can end up with some really wild weapons in this game that just clear the screen in a really satisfying way, and that's your reward for cracking the build crafting puzzle. I was also very impressed by the new characters that completely make you rethink the way the game system works with impressive imagination, and there's a light village builder between runs where you can work on your permanent buffs. I beat this game, I beat the new game plus, I beat the new game plus plus before I finally had to cut myself off and play other things, and that's a credit to the game's carefully balanced systems, its soothing moment-to-moment action, and its infinite replayability. It didn't quite crack the top five, but I think this is the perfect spot for Ball Pit. That brings us to our top five, and the next one is a very unlikely inclusion that I'm really happy is here. It is Ark Raiders. And if you had told me at the start of the year that a multiplayer extraction shooter would appear anywhere on this list, never mind in the number 5 slot, I probably would have thought you were smoking something. But multiplayer smash hit Ark Raiders was one of the revelations of the year. The first thing that drew me in was the cool key art with an awesome Star Wars aesthetic and a really interesting setting too. It's not exactly near future, but it's like a mid-future world where humanity has been driven underground by Ark, intelligent killer robots that patrol the surface for reason unknown. The Raiders have a city called Speranza, where they live, but they head to the surface to scavenge, be it for power cables, ammo, nuts and bolts, information, tech, fruit, or faded photos. And that's where you come in. You can either play solo or as a pair or a trio. Each surface run can be no longer than half an hour before the Ark hit the area. And in that half hour, you get to explore, salvage, search houses or offices or factories and prize open circuit boxes to find out what's inside. And during that time, you will cross paths with both the Ark and other players in encounters that can go any number of ways. And that's where this game really sings. It is somehow a story generator. Every run feels like a tall tale of some kind, whether it's the one where you shot a leaper from a tower block roof and it jumped right up onto the building next to you, or it's the run where you found yourself hemmed in an underground garage and two randoms came to your rescue, you killed the Ark together and escaped with all the loot. Or maybe it's the one where you found a key to a confiscation room and found a snap hook, a mixtape, a high level augmented rifle, only to be shot in the back at the extraction point by some raider who'd said don't shoot first. And yes, all of those are true stories. Ark Raiders really is a wonder, from its show-stopping visuals to the uncanny intelligence and persistence of the Arks which will hunt you down, to the uncertainty of the social aspect, to the wide variety of subtasks that will keep you coming back for more. I have 50 hours in this game and I'm nowhere near done. My arsenal is growing in line with my confidence, and there are big machines out there that I want to take a run at. I feel like if Bethesda had more imagination, this could have been what Fallout 76 was. It's a modern take on that fight and forage formula, and I think it's an improbable smash hit that might just be here to stay in a very competitive multiplayer landscape. That is Ark Raiders. Which brings us to number 4, an indie game that really outperformed my expectations of it and really stuck in my mind this year, and that is Promise Mascot Agency. This is the indie game that I'm perhaps most surprised at how overlooked it has been in this awards and GOTY season. It's a game that delivered on all fronts, from the vehicular collectathon and management sim gameplay to the wavy retro small town Japan vibes, and a stellar period piece soundtrack that's really creative as well. It has an engaging visual novel style Yakuza crime story, and best of all, an unhinged and hilarious cast of anthropomorphic mascots. Playing as a disgraced Yakuza called Mishi the Cleaner, you're consigned to a small town called Kazomachi to bring your Yakuza family back from the brink. To do so, you need to turn a failing mascot agency into a money spinner, which means recruiting and managing mascots, finding customers, and forging connections with the troubled community of Kazomachi. You drive around the island with Pinky, your maniacal sidekick, sitting in the back. You power up your van, which opens up more of the environment to explore. And what initially seems to be a small, simple, open world turns out to be really multi-layered and rich, not least due to the colourful cast of characters. They're all lovingly illustrated and voice-acted in Japanese, and there's just so much going on in this game. There is a base to upgrade, there is a miniature card battler for mascot events, there are individual mascots with stories of their own, there's a passive income economy to try and crack open, and it really does keep you busy. I think this is a polished gem that nails everything it does perfectly. It was a comfort game, it was an aesthetic victory, and it has style for miles, so don't pass up on this one. That's Promise Mascot Agency. And that brings us to my third placed game of the year. It's something that you might have been expecting to see higher. It's something that you may have heard about before. It is one of the runaway hits of 2025 and a milestone in RPGs in the modern era. It is Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Oh, Clair Obscura is a game that needs no introduction. It is the FRPG that has set the world alight, sweeping award shows and winning the hearts and minds of critics and players. It's a romantic, melancholic story that is mature one minute and childlike the next, with themes of purpose, loss, imagination, and grief, all made lighter by the glittering dreaminess of its high fantasy world. This is a fusion of JRPG mania and wry, moody French sensibilities that feels both improbable but somehow also perfect. It just clicks together. The Frenchness adds depth and introspection to JRPG whimsy in a way that we haven't seen done quite before. There's a lot to talk about here, and the game does pretty much everything right, as long as you're into parrying, that is. But when I think of Clair Obscur, I think of moments. I think of a lingering shot on Maëlle, her eyes shivering in disbelief. I think of the Act 1 finale that blew the story and its potential wide open and made me realise I was playing something more than I thought. I think of the spectral figure of the Paintress, a vision, a villain, a mystery towering over this weird fantasy realm. And I think about the wonder of this slowly opening overworld and the suspense of where the next doorway might lead, to a mountaintop, a nightmarish battlefield, or a dappled ocean floor. It's number 3 here because I never quite gelled with the counter-based combat, but it's a testament to the surprising labyrinthine story that I played to credits anyway, and the ending I got was unforgettable and worth every missed parry along the way. There has been a lot of debate about AI and whether this is an indie game. I think it's clearly a AA game with a big budget and a lengthy credits list, but I don't think that should detract from how good this game is. It deserves all of the praise that it has gotten, including a very respectable third place in this top 10. That's Clair Obscur, Expedition 33. And that brings us to my number 2 game of 2025. It is an improbable sequel that outshone the original in many ways and was just a vision, not only for contemporary video game stories, but also for ideas of selfhood and community in the age we live in. I think this game is a masterpiece. I think it is a wonder. It is Citizen Sleeper 2, Starward Vector. Starward Vector felt like a gift of a game. In the first Citizen Sleeper, we get a nagging sense of there being a whole system out there beyond the eye, of asteroid belts, stations, colonies, moons and more. But we just hear about it from passers-by, from travellers coming through the eye, and getting to go out and explore it is something I never expected that I would get. We got more of Gareth Damian Martin's tight, detailed prose describing places lushly and vividly, right down to what people eat and drink in the far corners of the Starward Belt. We got to revisit the lonely, disassociated experience of being a sleeper, and to deepen our understanding of what being a sleeper means. We got a game that pushed back a lot more, losing some of the coziness but gaining stakes in its place. And we got a game that encourages the player to rest, to take time off, to reduce stress, and to look after both themselves and the community that is forming around them. For all of its detached outer space chilliness and loneliness, the Citizen Sleeper games are loaded with gentle existentialism. It's transhuman that doesn't forget the humanity part, with hope, optimism, and a good spirit of solidarity, caring, and camaraderie. It's a game about recovery and community, and I found what it does to be gripping and enjoyable, but also generous, wise, and kind of important. And that's why Citizen Sleeper 2 Starward Vector is my second place game of 2025. Now, I didn't expect this to be my game of the year. It's a game that I watched coming with a mixture of trepidation and fascination. It mixes AAA production values with art house sensibilities and the director's golden touch for gameplay. It's part intoxicating sandbox and part sci-fi B-movie. My game of the year for 2025 is Death Stranding 2, On the Beach. Death Stranding 2 On the Beach is, like its forebear, a weird game. It's part hero's journey, it's part subtle multiplayer experience, it's part traversal puzzle, and driving around this world delivering parcels was once again just a strangely sublime experience. It created a mood that I find hard to pin down and impossible to forget. It's that feeling of being on a hike on your own in deep nature. In this game, you'll find yourself off the grid on your last sliver of battery, summiting mountains in the pink dawn, or tracing the edge of a huge crater lake as a spectral sunken city emerges from the waves. The landscape is vast and intimidating, until you finally start to tame it through the collective road-building project, where many players have to voluntarily contribute materials and all benefit from the result. The stealth combat in this game was also much improved, with a phenomenally comfortable feel and tons of options and approaches available to any situation, and I think that's something you have to address when talking about this game is the writing. It's a jumbled, almost nonsensical mood board of pregnancy, afterlife, trauma, estrangement, infrastructure, psychogeography, fraternity, and it borders on the incoherent. The plot itself is overcomplicated and a little bit contrived. It's grasping at grand meaning that doesn't seem to come, and that might sound disqualifying for a game of the year, but something happened during the final third of my playthrough of this game. I was enjoying it so much, despite all of the frustrations with the writing and dialogue, and I felt some kind of shift, like looking at a magic eye picture, where initially it just looks like noise, but if you relax yourself and look at it in just the right way, you start to see a picture emerge. I stopped grappling with specificities and started to just enjoy the whole vision. That means the character vignettes, the musical numbers, the strange robot samurai, the softness of the game's central sisterhood, the cameos, the silly hand gestures, the movie references. It started to turn into something that I've rarely experienced. That is a game that is so perfect and imperfect and vast and confusing all of at once that it starts to transcend its own form. And while there are some parts of me that wholly disagree with the approach, I think that throwing everything at the wall has resulted here in something kind of spectacular and unique. Death Stranding 2 feels like more than a game to me. It feels like a space, it feels like a place, it feels like a universe, a snow globe all of its own that you can step into. It's more than the sum of its parts. It is somehow an experimental game on a AAA budget, and it gave me some of the best gaming moments I had in 2025 and maybe ever, and that is why Death Stranding 2 on the Beach is my game of the year for 2025. So there we have it. That's the Games of the Year content for 2025 wrapped with that Final Cut episode. I hope that you've enjoyed the series this year. I was going to get Kieran Daly on, but he went away on a sort of family vacation and our window to record fell through. So maybe I will have Kieran on in January, just for a chat about what he's playing, and maybe to do like an Ark Raiders episode, seeing as I've been playing the game with him over the last couple of months. And I don't want to end the podcast on a negative note, but I should explain briefly that I wasn't a big fan of Silksong. I found it too hostile and punishing. Hades 2 was a little bit too close to the tree. It was an apple that was too close to the tree to really hook me this year. Blueprints just wasn't my thing. I didn't quite get round to playing Ghost of Yote or Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. So if you were wondering why any of those games didn't make the list, that is why. I did try and play as much as I could, you know, but I am only one person. And you have to follow your instincts on what you're going to like, right? You have to spend your time wisely. And who knows, maybe if I had given more time to Ghost of Yote or Kingdom Come, or if I had cooled my boots and come back to Silksong fresh, the list could have looked different. But this is how it stands now. And I had a really interesting conversation when Blinkoom was on, actually, about how we don't edit our Games of the Year lists. We could go back and retrospectively jumble them up with the power of hindsight. But there's something about them being an end-of-year snapshot that happens before the New Year fireworks and is never really touched again. That I really like. It becomes like an autobiographical snapshot of the year that was. However, this was the fifth year of Gaming in the Wild Games of the Year content, which means that there are now 50 games that have all been in a top 10, and probably another 30 or 40 honorable mentions. And that is interesting to me. Maybe that's something that I could do something with. I could go back and look at all of those Games of the Year and list them out as a five-year block, and put them into order, like which of the five games of the year would top the list ultimately in the last 5 years of play, in the last 5 years of this podcast. If that's something that you think sounds interesting, then hit me up and let me know, because it could become like a tier maker, or it could become a special podcast episode. Maybe something fun to do in 2026. But with the turn of the year comes a turn of attention. I always like to start looking forward at the start of the new year. And so I will make my big indie preview for 2026. And there will be a January look ahead indie games video as well coming down the pike. So lots to look forward to, and it's been a great year. So thanks very much for listening, everyone. And until next time, take care of yourselves and each other. And bye-bye for now.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.